You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey. Me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome back to Series 3, Episode 1 of Cawley's Call. We're absolutely delighted to be back for another season, and hopefully it's as good as last year, the year before. Obviously we finished off with our live show at the end of the season. That's the last time I saw Stewie. He looks great, everybody. He looks $1 million as always. I think.
Do I really?
You look very well, yeah.
Do I? Yeah, thanks. What do you think, Neil? Thanks, Neil.
You're giving away the guests now and everything, Stu. But I just wanted to say before we start to thank everyone who did come, obviously, to the live show in the Sugar Club. It was a big success, we thought. Anyway, people seemed to enjoy it, and we're planning another one this year for definite, and we may even have two. So we'll speak more about that as the season goes on. But we're delighted to have you back. Of course, we're counting down. It's only a matter of days now for the new season. We were all in Tala. Well, I was. I don't think the boys were. I was in Tala for the game on Friday night, the President's Cup. So we might even touch on that. But we're here to preview the new season. There's lots of hype. There's a lot of positivity around about the league. And I think it could be... we'll ask the lads if it's blind optimism on our part, or should we be as excited as what some people are. And of course we have Mr. Neil O'Riordan, the chief sports writer from the Irish Sun, joining us today as well. Neil, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good to see you. We've lots to discuss with you, Neil, because even though so much has gone on in the off season, and thankfully the off season wasn't as long as it has been over the last number of years, obviously it's shortened because the season is kicking off sooner, as we say, this Friday in the middle of February, which is great. But a lot has gone on in that off-season, not just with the clubs, but a lot with the FEI. So we want to touch on the most recent kind of events of the FEI, hence why Neil is here with us. Also, we will preview the games and the league later in the show. But the fact that, I suppose, the big news last week was the announcement of the FEI coming out, to the fact that we're bidding for the Euro Championships in 2028, Neil. Mm-hmm. Along with obviously Northern Ireland, Wales, Scotland, England. It was met with, probably domestically and from the League of Ireland faithful, with a bit of outrage. Could you say outrage? Or a bit of a backlash towards the fact that the way things have been over the last number of years, people are suggesting, do we really need to go down that road, whereas we've a lot more to focus on in the here and now. Obviously you were a little bit critical of it, would that be fair to say?
Yeah, no, I would be, just without the reasons outlined. Like, we kind of felt we're at ground zero with the FEI in terms of building it up, and there's so much to be addressed within Irish football. I don't think we really need a distraction such as this. I think it's great in a concept on its own, co-hosting the tournament, brilliant, but let's just get everything right at home first before we look to do that.
Stuart, how did you feel about it when you heard the news last week?
I'd be mixed emotions, a bit like Neil. Funny enough, since I started to kind of read this strategy plan, I'm trying to understand what exactly is going on. Neil uses the phrase, I think we're at ground zero. I do agree there. I mean, I've actually only coming up this, thinking about this in my head quite recently, when, you know, we all had the financial crash here in Ireland, and the way the government used NAMA as a kind of a sidearm to kind of take all the crap and the shit away and to allow the country to move forward. In the same way, I think we're a little bit like that at the moment with the Football Association of Ireland. I think there's a lot of legacy debt laden down the association, not just financial debt, but even sort of, I suppose, I think there's even a kind of a knowledge debt there with regards to the people that work with the association. I think there's a cultural problem as well, and I don't think surging forward with all these kind of aspirational style stuff is a good idea. I think in a way a strategic plan is important, but I think there has to be an element of reality about what the situation is. I do embrace the strategic plan and how they've outlined it and setting down goals for people to adhere to get some sort of structure on it. But, you know, what I'm fearful of is this is all going to be one big white elephant, and it's meant to distract people for the next 3 or 4 years, and I don't, people just aren't tick anymore.
Okay, I'm gonna, you've jumped ahead to the strategic plan. We were on the Euros, okay?
Yeah, but it's, so I think it all matters because part of the yeah, strategic plan, but it, you know, I think the important thing is that you can't pull the wool over people's eyes anymore.
No, well, and we'll get, I want to get your view, and you've already given a strong indication of what your view is in terms of the strategy plan. But just on the Euros, first of all, because that was the Monday, and then it was Tuesday, was it then?
Well, the strategy was actually launched that night, but then Jonathan Hill was available to the media the next day, and that would be an issue I'd have with it too, because, you know, the strategy is an important document in laying out where the FAI is going. And on the same day, you have that bit announced. Mm. So for all the talk that it won't be a distraction, on that very day, they have their strategy launch overshadowed by the announcement. Like, I can't get my head around why that couldn't have been done at a different time. Like, it's,
well, his explanation was that they had to get it in at a certain date, was it, the application, and make their feelings known that they were...
That's fine, change the strategy launch date.
No, hang on. These guys...
No, let me give my view before, and because I'm going to counter a couple of things that you've said, right? And I'm just...
Yeah, okay, go on, yeah.
And it's actually...
It's not by accident that both of them came over out at the same time. No, it's information overload.
All right, let me hear me out on this little one, right? I thought the reaction was a little bit over the top to the bid. This was my.
Now, by the way,
I'd be the first to be critical of the FEI.
What's,
okay,
what's their reaction, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, just from the
cranky sod like me,
Niels, Twitter. We go by Twitter, but it seems to be the League of Ireland faithful. As
I'm coming back. Back in a minute.
Which is what we're part of. Okay.
Right.
And I'd be the first to be critical of the FEI. I think Dion Fanning was on one of the shows, and he actually wrote a really good article over the weekend on The Currency about this as well, making the view, his opinion is, why can't we have the bid and try and fix the issues as well? And I would have been very much of the view that when they announced the last week that they were obviously bidding for this to take part, which is 6 years, 7 years down the line, should they not be given the opportunity to come out with the strategic plan, which they did then the following evening or whatever, let them be allowed to get on with the job in hand, because this, as you say, Neil, we're at ground zero. This is a huge opportunity in terms of building from the bottom up. We've hit rock bottom. So this regime as such, Jonathan Hill's regime at the moment, and what he's inherited and the team of people he's put around him across the board in the FEI, they have an unbelievable opportunity now to grasp Irish football and maybe take it forward to a place that we've never seen before. Okay, so yeah, should they not be allowed that and afforded that opportunity over the next 2-3 years to get on with the job, and then we judge them after the 2 or 3 years and say, well, hold on a minute, lads, you said this and this, you promised that the aspiration was that we'd be in top ranked 30 the League of Ireland teams across the board in Europe, which is a bit
virtually impossible.
Exactly, which we know it is, but some of the other things that they've outlined, qualifying for tournaments for the senior team, obviously the facilities plan as well for the League of Ireland, which we're all aware of, which is badly needed. So should they not be afforded the chance to actually implement these things, what they're saying, and then we judge them off the back of that, rather than jumping to a conclusion now? And with the bid, do you not think it's feasible that they can get on with these little jobs, or not little jobs, big jobs, and try and fix the issues, which are big issues, we know, but still be bidding for a tournament in 7 years?
So yes, about the questions you just said there, but I actually agree with Neil. Why do you have to announce both at the same time? That's an admin fuck up.
Well, it's
for
not
want of a breath. It is.
If you're trying to convince people this is not going to be a distraction, you don't do it on the same day. Because that's...
Do you think it's a distraction?
Yes, I do. And I'll tell you why. Because of the FAI's own financial problems and the economic crash, there was a series of redundancies within the FAI. The staff suffered a series of pay cuts. Mm-hmm. So naturally, as a result of that, they've all got extra work to do because the workforce is smaller. Morale isn't great, despite improvements that might have come about. And so I think there are two full-time staff devoted to the bid, as well as one consultant, Declan Conroy, who's got an awful lot of work out of the FEI down the years.
Yeah. Is he still around?
Yeah.
You said it, Alan. Yeah. Come back to that.
I've no doubt that other staff will be pulled in to do bits here and there. And that to my mind, detracts from the more important matters at hand. Yes, ultimately, I think you're right that we can't judge them until 2 or 3 years down the line. But I think it's an opening gambit. If you're trying to convince me that this isn't going to be a distraction, then doing what I did was wrong. Because there's also the legacy issue of when we hosted the Europa League final and other things like that. Like, that was used up as a barometer that Irish football was in a healthy state.
Yeah, but I don't think it's fair to go back to that, Neil, in terms of the fact that you could accuse this regime of the same.
It's not, but I think we've got to recognise that, like, the general public who only had a passing interest in football, they bought that, you know? And that allowed all the messing that went on with the FAI to go unchecked for a long time, because, like, you look at the way John Delaney was treated on the news pages, like, he was this celebrity.
And yeah, you know, and look, so many people have made errors and mistakes there, because we all know that the house came crumbling down, and a lot of people were fully aware of the issues and problems. But as you say, maybe they were pulling the wool over people's eyes. As Stewie said there in his answer a moment ago, people are not thick now, and people are more aware of these things, that maybe people should be and will be held more accountable than what we've seen over the years. Hence why I'm saying, should these people that are in their positions and roles now be afforded that opportunity to say, okay, this is what we've outlined this year, next year and the year after, and then judge them?
I think you're ultimately right. I just don't think they got off to a great start.
Okay. And that's fair.
And that's the worry. If they made a mistake like that already, then that's a worrying sign for going forward. When I read the strategic plan, okay, it's a great document, okay, because you do need that. You need, you know, in a modern corporation. Okay.
Well, it's like it's fluffy and kind of buzzword.
It's decent. I had a look at the one online, and it's decent. It's well laid out. It's definitely, you know, you can see that Jonathan Hill comes from that kind of background. He's got those marketing skills. You know, as a corporation as an association, in order to kind of get to a certain goal, you do need this. Okay, but the worry I have, right? This would be the worry I would have in my role. In my current job, so I'm director of digital experience and strategy. I see these things.
Woo!
I see these things. This is the only way I can gauge this, right? I see these things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen three CEOs come and go in the last 7 years saying pretty much the exact same things. And nothing much has really changed, because ultimately you have to have the staff to do it. And I don't think we have the staff to do it. And that's a damning indictment of the staff in the FAI, and I'm sorry, but it is. Because
that might be a little bit unfair, because that could go back to Neil's point, Stu, about the financial situation to find themselves in as well, and you're losing bodies.
So you need to get investment, right? And that's the idea of the strategic plan. It's to put it out there. This is where we want to get to. We want to change. We want to, and by the way, when I say the staff, I don't think we have the skill set, because we need a much more modern skill set than what probably the staff would have had before. Yes, when it comes to coaching, it's core. Coaches are coaches and they do what they do best. But when it comes to the administration side of things, the embracing digital technologies, that's a different world altogether than what the current staff are used to. But by all means, the strategy is laid out in a way, from what I can see, to try and get as much investment as is possible into a new brand. And so therefore the FAI can go and maybe hire that expertise or bring on board the type of people that can go and further implement this strategy. But it's a huge worry, and it's a huge worry because of kind of the historical legacy debt of the association.
But there comes a time, Stu, where we have to draw a line under that.
Yeah,
hit rock bottom in terms of what has gone before. You can't keep going back to that, is my view. And here we are now with these people. I think the document is fairly good, a little bit scant on detail in terms of even the likes of the facilities plan that we're going to review this in 2023. As you said, where is the investment, or how are they going to go about restructuring, but maybe putting better facilities into the grounds or whatever, and improving the standards of the grounds, because we all know the facilities is a major problem. Now, there was good news last week in terms of the grants as well, the capital sports grants for a lot of the problems, or for a lot of the teams, as you said as well, Stewie, that they're almost putting this out there that they want investment. I think they've kind of made good strides in terms of getting the government to realise that, look, we have an onus and a responsibility on us now because of Brexit and certain issues, that we have to develop the players here on our doorstep, and we need to build some sort of an industry with the underage teams feeding into the League of Ireland teams, because ultimately our international players are going to come from a large chunk of players that are coming through that pathway now, whereas before, as we all know, it would have went through the English route. So do you think, in terms of the strategy plan, Neil, what you read and what you saw, and you got to question Jonathan Hill about it last week, and Roy Barrett, do you think it was fairly good, decent? You'd be positive about it?
I think it was okay as an opening gambit, but again, like, I know it's a small thing, but the thing about the top 30 in Europe did worry me, because, like,
it's impossible.
Yeah, we got our highest ever coefficient mark last year, and we actually dropped three places because it's calculated in a 5-year cycle. So we would literally need to have at least the same year every year for the next 3 years to have any chance. And even then, it's very unlikely to happen. So the small, that kind of small detail would worry me, because they should be on top of that, I think. Mm. I think it's hard, like you say, with the facilities plan. We have to wait and see. We can't really judge it on what they've said so far. We can only judge it on what's said in a year's time. I would sort of give them some credit. Like, I think with some of the announcements last week, and a lot of clubs, like you said, did quite well. And a lot of them are quick to credit Walter Holleran and the FEI in terms of his assistance. So I think there has been improved help there. Like, I don't think clubs probably exploited the grant system as well as they could have done.
Well, from what I've heard and what I've spoken to people involved in clubs, exactly that. It was almost collaborative with Walter helping them. And these were grants that could have been availing of for a long time, yet none of the clubs maybe knew, had the know-how to go about it in terms of their applications, whereas that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Every little bit does help, like, you know, and the League of Ireland does kind of have this image of always having, you know, looking for help, having the begging bowl out at times. And in some ways that's justified, but, like, it does need help to get to where it needs to get to, and a little bit of help can go a long way, just in terms of pointing, educating clubs, you know, and whether it's to do with facilities, whether it's to do with compensation payments they're due. Like, the reality is most clubs are heavily reliant on volunteers. They might have a skeleton staff. Some clubs would have more than others. It's difficult for them to have all the knowledge that they need to have to operate as an effective club. And okay, the onus is on them to one extent, but ultimately the FEI are the caretakers of football in Ireland. So if they can't help them, then the onus is on them to help them. And it's good to see that in relation to facilities. And I think in relation to compensation stuff, like, I know Will Clark would be all over that, and I've no doubt that he would give his time and expertise to the club as well. So that's an encouragement in terms of maybe an improvement from what's gone on before.
Yeah, and that's where they should be credited, because I think there is people that are trying to make change who care. We had Will in here last year. Will's a good fella. And there is more people, I think, involved now. And that's why I'm saying, under this, they have to be afforded the chance, I feel. And if they fail, 2 years down the line, 3 years, we can show them that document and say, you promised this, you promised this, you failed, you delivered this, but you failed on two or three other things.
I find that doesn't work anymore. Because, like, that's been the rhetoric for as long as I've been around. Like, you know, when you retrospect, you can't go at things retrospectively.
But the rhetoric with the FEI or with everyone across the board?
I'm talking about the FEI in this particular case. Like, you know, I'm more than willing to give this guy an opportunity. Absolutely more than willing to give him a chance. But how long is he in the role?
15 months, I think, is it?
It's border. He's there a good clip. And I'll give him this. It's a good document. And it certainly, the signs are very, very positive. I something just came into my head there when we were talking about the grants that came out. We probably should point out that that's as a result of the strategic plans that the clubs were educated on doing. What was it, 4 or 5 years ago, or was it even longer? Remember the whole issue over the $5,000?
I think that was more marketing, though.
But I remember at the time it was to get clubs to get their house in order and to be able to go and apply for these grants. And to be fair, this is the result of it now. Clubs now know how to get their hands on.
Well, that's because, as Neil says, a lot of the credit is going to Walter Holleran, because he kind of working together with the clubs in terms of what they were should have been availing of for a long, long time. So these are things that I think are positives. And I mentioned at the start of the show that, is it blind optimism? Should we go along with the hype that's kind of around the League of Ireland starting Friday night? We're all excited about it. Don't get me wrong, I know all about the problems and the issues. We've been talking about them for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think there comes a point where we do have to draw a line in the sand and say, ground zero, rock bottom, whatever phrase you want to put on it, and start trying to build from the bottom up. And I keep saying it, I think these should be afforded that time or that chance. I'm not saying give them years and years, but here's a plan maybe over the course of 3 years that they should be afforded.
So I completely take that point. Okay? And I'll be, to be quite honest with you, I mean, I might be having a little bit of a bitch and a moan here, but it's only meant to be in a constructive way. I think we've failed in the past for not holding the FAI accountable. I don't know whether you'd agree with that, Neil. I don't think there was, you know.
No, we did. Like, you know, people were
not for the want to try.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, of course, you know, and I, you know, you can elaborate that if you want. But I know that element of accountability, it, you know, trying to hold the FAI to account, it didn't work in the past. Or it
can I ask you one thing about that, Neil? Right, and it made me laugh over the Christmas. Because I was away there for a few days and I read back Champagne Football, mm-hmm. and the story where you were at the soccer writers do when you went up and basically gave it to Delaney.
Oh yeah.
Was that kind of spoken amongst all the soccer writers people, like whatever the committee that you had, in terms of that speech?
Tell the story.
Well, it was the year after you just won the league in 2006 with Shells.
Yeah.
And so it was the year when everyone went belly up. You'd gone months without being paid. So, like, the traditional speech was supposed to be, you know, you just congratulate everyone, blah, 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 which I did, but I didn't think I could, in the circumstances, congratulate you and say nothing about what had gone on, like, you know, that. So I think, if I remember correctly, I kind of, you know, credited the staff and players and just said, but, you know, like, it's not a great look when they've been going months without pay, like, and, you know, yeah. More credit to you for doing it in those circumstances, but, like, let's have a look at where we are in the league. And a lot of players left at the end of that season too to go abroad, like for Sean Dillon, Jason Byrne, and there was a lot more. Like, I think there was up to into the high teens that year. And, you know, there's always going to be progression to better leagues, but it was because our league was in a lot of trouble financially. Anyway, I had written that speech myself. It wouldn't have been in consultation with anyone. When I got back to the table, Delaney wouldn't speak to me.
He was sitting at your table.
Yeah, yeah. Because whatever, I was, it was my turn to be president, and so he was at the top table.
So the head table, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there would have been some people who weren't particularly supportive of me within the association. So we got a letter. Every member of our association got a letter to their home address from Delaney.
To your home address.
Yeah.
We know where you live in the woods. Yeah. Yeah. Is there a bulletin there?
Just complained about the speech, and you know, some of it, like, they misconstrued some of what I said, but anyway, seeking an audience for him to address us. So there was a bit of to and fro within the association, and
was that where the relationship then went really sour from then on, kind of thing?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been great, like.
Amongst you and your colleagues?
Well, that was probably more just me. Like, it probably was a solo. I don't regret it. Like,
brilliant. I thought it was brilliant.
Maybe I shouldn't. Like, okay, I was speaking on behalf of the association, so maybe I took a liberty by straying from the norm. But I don't think, in all consciousness, I could have got up there and said everything's great, because it wasn't. It was a mess.
Absolutely.
It's funny enough, as you say that, the time period, it probably coincided with a kind of shift in approach from him anyway, because it's certainly from there on in, it seemed to be, everything just seemed to be litigation just thrown at you regardless of what you ever said.
Yeah, no, he definitely, he was kind of going aggressively after journalists at that stage, you know. I think a couple of years later he made, not to me, so he didn't go to our event for years afterwards. And then he started coming back when Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane were going.
Okay.
And he passed some remark to a colleague that he reckoned I had matured in the period.
Oh, very good.
I'm not sure that's true.
Just in case some of the Rovers fans are wondering, do you want to tell people where you live?
Okay, so moving on, I suppose. We're looking at the league now, Neil. Obviously, how long have you covered the League of Ireland?
I first wrote about the League of Ireland in 1995 when I was just finished 5th year in school.
Okay, 95. So what's that? Got to 25 years.
More than it, yeah.
Wow.
50 years in school?
Yeah.
Stewie was playing.
Mm-hmm. You might have even...
Stewie's about 50.
I don't think you'd even made your debut by then,
in 95, I was at Bowes as a kid, yeah. I think, yeah. I was... But again,
schoolboy teams? Or actually Bowes first team? When you say
I played home for Armstella for schoolboy.
When you say a kid, were you 18, 19 then?
I was in the Bowes first team squad, yeah. Okay. I was
played in
a European game, yeah. Neil actually interviewed me in Malta. Remember this?
I do remember that.
That was a nice little day, wasn't it?
Remember George Best staying in the hotel.
We were going over to play Hibs in Malta, Champions League, and we were staying in, was it the Crown Plaza?
I'm not sure. I was staying in a crappy hotel around the holiday.
All right. So
I'd say you've stayed in some shitty places over here.
This was an Ollie special.
I always think about that with journalists.
We stayed in the Crown Plaza, and went down to the pool, and George Best was there. Alex Best, yeah, just sitting beside the poolside and just relaxing. He'd undergone his first kidney transplant.
Yeah,
and he was recovering from it. Yeah, he knew the hotel owner or something. They just let him stay.
Well, I remember when Evan was giving Desi Baker stick about the two Manchester United legends.
Neil interviewed me after the game. We had a cup of coffee in downtown Malta. It was lovely.
Because I always think with the likes of yourself, I just associate with covering the league, and there's like a core group of yourself. I would have remembered when Paul Butner would have always been in amongst the group. Obviously Owen then, but Paul O'Hare, yeah, all the lads,
Gary Doyle.
And, yeah, Gary Doyle would have been very much so, yeah. Mm-hmm. And to think, obviously we love the league and played and go to the games now, and I grew up with it. But the journalists, you've been there through it all over the years. That's why I'm saying going back to the Delaney stuff, and obviously,
yeah, a lot of us would have gone to games as fans before that. So like, you know, it's there's kind of an investment. It's not like you're not completely detached from it, because most of us grew up with it, you know.
So we've two Bose fans in the room here.
you're a disgrace.
I'm only saying.
You're a disgrace. Has the job changed much since you've come into it? I imagine it must have.
It's changed more, yeah. Clubs are kind of trying to probably
lock you down.
Well, direct more in terms of media coverage, like, you know. The odd time, like, you know, no club would have really had a functioning press officer when I started out. So you generally dealt with the manager, and you know, the manager might give you a player's number or whatever. And it was kind of all you know, you were in more regular contact with managers. But now it's a bit stricter. There might only be one player might be available, you know, and they choose which player it is. Or, you know, it's all done in organised interviews rather than kind of one-on-one kind of call. So it's that aspect of it changed, but it's still a lot better than covering the international team or covering GAA, from what I can work out.
You still have more access.
The access is still better.
It's important as well, isn't it, really?
I think so, yeah. And like, that's,
it comes across more natural, I suppose, if you can kind of.
But like, and I think that goes across the board, not just the media. Like, the thing, like, my kids go to games now, and like, my son loves Liverpool and Salah, but, you know, that's so far removed, like, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you can go to a match on a Friday night and you can see the players afterwards. There's not going to be a hassle getting an autograph.
Yeah, and like, the first thing I walked into Tala the other night, first person that saw me when I walked up the steps, you're not wearing your Bose jersey, right?
Why not?
But the thing about Bose is, my little fella loves Bose, as we've said here. And the likes of that, Neil, that's a great point, because he loves Spurs and Harry Kane, and we went over to a match. And look, it was great for him to see the big stadium. But like, these fellas are out in the pitch and no connection, no nothing to them whatsoever. Brought him down to Daily Mount, mad about Bose, Georgie Kelly. He's down meeting Georgie afterwards and all, and he's going home thinking, like, and even now Georgie's moved on and he's all still, where's Georgie and who is he playing for and all this? And so there's that connection, and it's so important for the young lads starting off. Like, and I think that's what we do really well and really good in the country in terms of bringing the young lads through, because you have to bring through the next generation as such that will eventually, that's their first taste of live football, really, in a stadium, in a ground. And there's no better feeling or no buzz better than that when you go and actually see. And the fact that you have a connection with them. So to be doing it 25 years, Neil, that brings me to your column here over the years, right? So you wrote a column this morning. Ahead of the new season, the League of Ireland's biggest challenge is to win over the general public, many of whom hold it in the same contempt normally reserved for farmers. Elaborate.
Well, like I alluded to earlier on, a lot of people, if they're actually, it's not that they've no interest in the league, they're actually quite antagonistic towards it, and just disparaging and dismissive. Oh, they always have to beg and bowl out. Things will never change. The same attitude, like, you know, to farmers, that, you know, they wouldn't survive without subsidies or grants, and League of Ireland, the basket case, you know, they could never make themselves viable. And that annoys me because, yes, like as you said earlier on, we're all fully aware of the problems in the league, and I don't think any of us kind of run away from them. We would kind of hold up our hand and point them out, but the kind of blind dismissal of any progress, I do find annoying. Like, I found this, like, in relation to, like, a lot of what the clubs do now, whether it's Sligo, Bows, Rovers, Pats, you know, in terms of community engagement, the funny thing is that I think they are beginning to learn from GAA clubs, which is important, that it's not just the first team, that it's beyond that. And all those kind of initiatives, whether it's Football for All, bringing in fans from direct provision centres, the commentaries for visually impaired, bit by bit, you cannot underestimate the outreach of that in terms of the impact that has on people. If you have, if you've a kid who's taking part in a Football for All scheme, all of a sudden, the goodwill from that kid's family and extended family, you know, you get that back in bucket loads. And that, because a lot of the commentary is, and most of it's directed at Bows, and some of it's taking the piss, and that's fine, why don't you concentrate on the football? But the point is, all they bloody well did was concentrate on the football, the clubs for too long, a first team, and did nothing else. And where did that get them? So when they try and do it differently, it's not within the league kind of slagging. You expect that.
Which is still, banter.
But it's people from the outside saying, oh, things never
change. Being dismissive of it.
Yeah, and look, they're actually trying to change and you're still giving them a hard time.
I'll put my hand up when it comes to this. I genuinely would, and the reason being, I kind of came from a culture. Football can be a horrible place sometimes, and it can be very inward looking, and it can be very it can be very kind of selfish and whatever the case may be. But when you come from that world and you step outside of it, you see from a different point of view. I remember when I played football, I'd be approachable by you guys, but I would always keep you at arm's length. And I slightly regret that a little bit now because
I used to laugh it up.
He's posting your number around.
Can you get him out of Collins, I come in one morning. Oh, here he is, fucking Quotey. Every time I open the paper, there's a fucking quote.
It does get into you. It becomes whether it's your fault or not, you start thinking a certain way, and you have to break from that. I've learned over the years that you have to change as a person, and so therefore the point I'm kind of getting to is what I now see the clubs doing, and I've always felt this now, even from when I retired, that there had to be an injection of youth into the clubs because they're fingers on the pulse. It's like when it comes to social media, right?
Yeah, as part of the staff.
Yeah, because what had happened was, when I played and I was coming towards the end of my career, you'd look around at the board and everyone was nearly 80 years of age. And
you've made this point a few times.
I've made this point, so I'm not going to get down there again. We needed the injection of youth, and we've seen that. It took a long time to come, by the way. And what we see now in clubs are young guys, young gals, their fingers on the pulse, they think differently, they're much more diverse and inclusive, they're open to all sorts of different avenues, and it's fantastic. It is fantastic, it really is, and they really are sticking it to the outfielders, and I put my hand there, and I'm as willing to change as anybody is, but I think what we're seeing now is what I'm probably trying to ask is how do clubs, go their own way, but don't maybe is it as easy as just replicating the GAA model? Because I don't think doesn't work for the other, right?
I think a lot of it's the same. You're a bit kind of, immersing yourself in the community, and it's sort of the connection isn't just the first team, and whether that's underage sides, and most League of Ireland clubs traditionally didn't have schoolboy, schoolgirl section. So, obviously someone have taken it on now in terms of the pathway with the national leagues. But, other clubs would then have more community-based teams. So are you just doing that to try and get players to the first team? Or are you saying, we should be looking to serve the community here as a club that can allow people of all diverse abilities to play football?
That's the line, I think, Neil, that you said there in your answer, that for years that's all they did was concentrate on the football and look where it got them. Yeah. Whereas now it's a different outlook, and I think you have to I think you should definitely, not congratulate them, but I think they should be complimented, the clubs, in how they're going about it. Now, as you says, I know Bo's get a bit of stick, but Bo's have been amazing at it. Even, I know from growing up in Sligo and still now the stuff, Sligo's the heartbeat of the town. Like Sligo Rovers is the heartbeat of the town, Stu. That's all people care about, and it's brilliant to see that, and that's what they want.
And everyone looks on very enviously at the fundraising that they do.
Yeah,
know,
and look, in my, obviously there's a big advantage in the fact that it's just the one team in the town or whatever. It's more difficult with four, five, six Dublin teams, whatever the case may be. But I think in terms of replicating, maybe you mentioned the GA stuff, but I think they're going down their own path of doing what they're doing in the community, and it's brilliant to see. I don't want to let the time run away in terms of the fact that there is a league starting. We want to concentrate a little bit on it. Shamrock Rovers, the obvious place to start, the favourites, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
Firm favourites, rightly so. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously won the title with, I suppose, a good degree of ease over the last two seasons. This year, they've obviously got Jack Byrne back. They've got a lot of options in an attacking sense. I don't think there's any question marks over them there. They've got the most firepower. They've got multiple options. They wouldn't wish this to happen, but if Rovers lost two attacking players to long term injuries, they could cope. I don't think you could say that about any other club in the league. They have, whether it's Graham Burke, Aaron Green, Rory Gaffney, Daniel Mandroyo, they've options. I could keep going on, like the names are there, so they've got that, and that's the kind of key. And we've seen before last season that they were able to kind of change players in and out, and it didn't really weaken them. So that they are by any definition the team to catch, you know.
Yeah, just looking back on last year's league table, like they lost six matches. I didn't think they were overly impressive, and I think the fact that they only won 24 and they ended up winning the league by 16 points in the end, I think it was more of a reflection on the challengers.
Yeah.
I don't think there was much of a challenge. Pats put up a little bit of one, but they were surprise contenders.
There wasn't much of a point spread between like eight and
And like that, obviously that's kind of is an indication when we looked at maybe the lower end of the table, how close it was for the team going into the playoff spot. But certainly when we sat here last year, I remember predicting, because I was at the President's Cup with Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers. It was a great game, and I came away thinking Dundalk looked like
There was nothing between both sides.
Exactly.
And then ultimately, what happened.
Whereas Sligo and Pats were the surprise contenders last year. Sligo getting off to a great start, putting themselves in a great position, 15, 16 games. Then they went to a period where they didn't win in 10 games, I remember, and they still stayed third, which is a reflection of how can that happen, really, like when you look at. So I would agree Shamrock Rovers are the firm favourites. I think they'll win the league. But looking at the game the other night, I was in Tala, and St. Pat's were very, very good. I was surprised, actually, because I mentioned this and I've told Stevie this. I thought Stevie O'Donnell was absolutely bonkers to leave St. Pat's.
Yeah.
Come the end of last
season. I'd agree.
Last season, they were after finishing second, they were after winning the cup. It looked like he was on the verge of building something really good. On top of the squad that he had there that won the cup, add in another two or three, and I felt it would have challenged Shamrock Rovers. For his own decisions, obviously, Stevie went his own way, and good luck to him. But going up to the game the other night, Tim has taken over, and obviously I like Tim, he's a good manager, but I was just unsure because of the players they'd brought in and what the players they lost. They played really, really well, Stu. I don't think they'll challenge Shamrock Rovers over the course of the season because of the squad that Neil outlined that Shamrock Rovers have that Pats don't have, but I think they'll be in those European positions, and that would be success for them, really, I think, to stay in the top three. The two issues I see for Shamrock Rovers, I think the goalkeeper will be an issue.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Alamanis. Neil, you're smiling because we've history here with goalkeepers at Shamrock Rovers. Stephen Bradley doesn't like me talking about his goalkeepers, but I was right. Well, I'm joking. Let me just know on that one, Stu. He made a mistake for the goals. I'm a huge fan of Manis, and I go back to the point. I know we're joking about it, but when he came in, when we were critical of the previous keepers, when he came in, they were absolutely brilliant. Shored up the defence, went on and won the leagues, and he was a brilliant goalkeeper. There was a few little glimpses last year that he might be a little bit on the wane. They didn't bring in a goalkeeper this year. He made a mistake again for the goal the other night, parrying it down in front of Owen Doyle. And I just think it might rear its head toward as the season goes on. The other area then I look at, it's okay, all good and well having all these players in the middle, and they're fantastic players, them all. But he has Gary O'Neill sitting in front of the back four, or if it's the back three, whatever he plays. He will play because he's the only one that does that job in the team. Jack will also play because he's their best player.
Yeah.
Then you have four players for two slots, I think. four brilliant players, and this isn't even including Chris McCann, who you could throw in as the fifth player. Dylan Watts, Mandriau, Richie Towell and Graham Burke. That could rear its head in terms of keeping that those egos happy and stuff like that. I think they'll win the league with the squad that they have, but I think they're the problems that Stephen Bradley may face throughout the season.
Yeah, well, look, I agree with everything you both said, to be quite honest with you, but I think a lot of it comes down to who's going to push them, you know, who's going to challenge.
And who will challenge them?
So I don't know. And the reason why I don't know is because there's been such a change in personnel at all the clubs. I mean, I don't think I can remember an off-season. Can you, Neil, as much where we've seen so many players move around at so many clubs? I mean, we expected at Bowes, but it seems to have kind of filtered into Dundalk, Derry, Pats, Shells have had, you know, six or seven come through.
I guess there's been a lot of kind of different reasons, like for, you know, obviously with Stephen going.
And it's because of the managerial changes. Yeah. It's kind of a very unique year, isn't it?
At some clubs, and then you had like Finn Harps, they'd gone down the foreign route, a lot of players, and you generally don't hang on to them as long as you might do Irish players.
Yeah.
And then Drogheda, obviously, they had a good young side who were getting opportunities elsewhere.
The only ones...
The team best place to compete is Pats.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think Pats are the best. So it all depends on Tim and how he... See, expectations everything, Alan. The team that wins the league is a team that wants to win the league. It's a hunger thing, and you have it from pre-season. From the day you turn up, you're expected to win the league. Rovers have that.
But St. Pat's
don't have that. Unless Tim is doing something privately that he's not telling people publicly, which is fine. But you just cannot have it. You can't have this scenario where we had it last year, kind of, with Pats and Sligo. They got off the two of them cracking starts. They were toe-to-toe with Rovers. They were even pushing Rovers to the point where Rovers weren't at it, and they were scraping through games and
late goals
and weren't really doing well. And then what happened was Rovers just we spoke about this before. Rovers just maintained a level. The other two dropped off because they're not expected to go and win it. So you
or did they not believe that
they didn't believe they're going to win it? And it's a culture in a team. You have to expect to go and win it. And I just don't see that happening. Now Derry,
I think they'll push Rovers.
This is the one I wanted to get to, because to answer my own question, who I think will push them, I think Derry are best placed.
Yeah,
because of the players they brought in, the quality that they brought in, there is a little bit of expectation on Rory, but I think he's embracing that. I think he's knowledgeable enough to realise the squad he's assembled. That look, I need to deliver on this as well. He's fully aware of that. I think the game to play against Shamrock Rovers, the second game of the season, which is live as well, I think it'll be their first home game because they're playing Dundalk this week away. I think there'll be an absolute bumper crowd because there's a lot of hype around Derry City at the moment as well. He's brought back two locals in McElhaney and Duffy. He signed Brian Maher, I think he's a really good signing, the goalkeeper. He's also brought in Patching, who had a great time on loan last year with him as well. He's brought him back, and he has a good relationship with Rory. So I think they're best placed to challenge them purely because of the squad that they have, and because Rory is very good and highly regarded as well. I think he's a very good manager and very good upcoming manager. Would you agree with that, Nick?
I think the other thing is, like, I know, like, Rory was kind of saying that it's a long term project. We can't become challengers overnight from where we're coming from. I think the other thing is, although he said like the budget was set in place before Philip had already sold his company, I've no doubt that if they are in a good position come the summer transfer window, that more money could be made available, you know, for them.
That's a great point.
If they need to strengthen, you know.
That's a great point.
So they're starting off with a good squad, but I think the potential will be there to add to it in the summer if needs be.
Now, they have a tough start. Dundalk away and Shamrock Rovers at home is a tough start.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, Dundalk are a fairly new side as well. Been a lot of change there. And although there's been change in Derry, a lot of those players will know each other. You know, they mightn't. Like McElhaney and Duffy, they will have played with some of those Derry players before. They've obviously played with Patching, you know. So although there's some new players coming in, a lot of them will have knowledge of each other.
The one little area of concern I would have then for Derry is, do they have a goal scorer to get the goals? Because you mentioned Pat, so I think there's going to be a huge reliance on Owen Doyle. And he's already scored last week, and he'll get goals. And he was brilliant the other night. A lad who's been away in England comes back. I know he was obviously probably out to impress, and that's the nature of Owen anyway, but his attitude was first class in the game the other night. Ran himself into the ground, got his goal. Typical Owen Doyle, hovering around, little sniffer goals, tap-ins, whatever you want. I think he'll have a huge impact, especially if they're to I don't think they'll challenge, but especially if they're to maintain some sort of European slot. Whereas I think with Derry, they obviously have Akintunde, the young lad McGonagall, who did really well, but he played a lot off the left. Who will Rory play as that number nine? Because I don't think Akintunde is going to get you.
I think there's a fair chance it'd be McGonagall. Yeah. He had a slow enough start, and I guess he's coming from a different direction than Doyle. You know, Owen's been playing at a very high level for a long time, whereas Jamie's making a step up from the Irish League, and maybe there was an adjustment period there, but there were kind of signs.
He was very, the night in Daly Mount, remember he cut in, scored, great goal.
Towards the end of the season there, he looked like he was hitting form, so I think he could have a big season.
But just even from Derry, like having finished fourth last year, that's a big expectation. I know they haven't brought in that many. I know they've kept the core group. Mm. That's a big ask now to ask a current squad to kind of go and challenge all
six,
of a sudden.
Six big signings, like the three from Dundalk, Brian Maher, Brandon Kavanagh,
but I don't think Stu, I don't think the league was good enough to think you're all of a sudden fourth to second or first is too big of a jump.
No, I think fourth to second isn't a big jump at all,
and not at all, because if you look at Derry, as you said, and you're right, they finished fourth, so you might think, oh well, second was very good, or third. Sligo Rovers have regressed. They've lost their two best players, John Mann and Johnny Kenny. They haven't replaced them. They've brought in the young lad Aidan Keane. They've brought a couple of what I would call squad players, O'Sullivan and Fitzgerald, on the wings. They haven't replaced them. Brought in a couple of unknowns now, New Zealand lad. I think
O'Sullivan and Fitzgerald have good potential. I saw them a few years ago from Limerick.
How long, Neil? A few years ago.
No, I know. But there was glimpses. O'Sullivan did quite well for Harps too. But I think they could thrive and if given a good run of games. I think they can potentially be good signed. I agree with you though. The other issue is. Some of the players coming in, they're coming in quite late in pre-season, which isn't ideal, you know. So there's a sense that they, you know, that are not scrambling, but they're, you know, you would like to have players in from the start of pre-season. And whatever about Johnny Kenny, they knew they were going to lose him, but losing John Mahan probably a bit.
I think John Mahan's the best player. Yeah, that's a massive loss. Season, I think he's the best centre half in the league, and I hope he does well. He was always going to go away. I remember looking at him 2 or 3 years ago, thinking it's only a matter of time before this lad goes away. And if anything, at the time, when he got that bad injury, I think that might actually help him, because in that time he was off, he came back like a monster, physically. He was always a big lad, but he was like a monster, and he's very good. His distribution is excellent as well. So look,
what about his haircuts?
I had a few dodgy ones.
I think we need to have a little. I don't want to say wage, because I don't want to bring gambling into it. But
who's
going to push Rovers?
Derry. Is my banker to do that?
Pats is mine.
Derry for me.
Okay. Bring us to the two, your own clubs. Shelburne, Stu, Damien Duff, huge addition to the league. Massive turnover of players. I think he's only kept four from the winning squad of last year, is it?
Yeah.
So he's brought in the guts of 15, 16 players, whatever the case may be. And no real marquee signings. Decent League of Ireland players, but no marquee signings.
I don't think he's interested in that at this moment in time. I think he's kind of doing it his way a little bit. I tell you what, the way they'll be fit and they'll be organised, and they'll want to play. They'll certainly want to play as well. And look, he has to be realistic as well. I mean, he was fighting with the demons a little bit, taking up the position in the first place. And I get that. I do get that. I totally get that. And I think he's been very, very honest in that he kind of had to overcome, a kind of a psychological barrier, for want of a better phrase. And he's put himself out there now. I like what he has to say. I really do. Well, I think he has a. I think he'd be. I mean, he must be a dream for you, Neil. Is he in terms of
when he talks? He's talking.
Don't worry, you'll get him after games. But I mean,
he needs to cheer up a bit.
Yeah. Oh, well, look. we can't all be going around like happy spas for sake.
I think him coming into the league is absolutely brilliant.
What do you think about him coming into the league?
Honestly, I do. I love Duff when he was playing. He was the only fella I remember coming into. He came into a studio in RT. We were doing one of the radio shows, and I actually genuinely went a bit like, "Fucking hell, it's Damien Duff," kind of thing. He has that aura and stature. Yeah. He's one of the best players we've ever produced. So I think him coming in managing, and I love the fact, as you say, there's an edge to him. He's honest. He probably will get himself in trouble at times throughout the season. But I think a player of his profile and stature now to be managing in the league, on top of all the other bits we're saying about the positivity, and I think it's amazing.
The one thing to say is, considering the the movement of players and the movement of managers, there's no doubt about it, there's going to be a surprise package. And there's got, so one of those clubs, one of those big clubs, Derry, Dundalk.
Derry won't be a surprise.
No, Derry, Dundalk, Pats, Shells, Bows, one of them is going to fail badly and one of them is going to do much better than expected. And it could well be, it's been Bows for a while, it could well be Bows again. Not saying, all I'm saying is that Shells could surprise. When I say surprise, I could mean Nick Fort. That's what I'm talking about when it comes to Shells. I think Dundalk could struggle. I think Dundalk could struggle this year.
I think Stevie's mad. I've said it numerous times. He's probably mad anyway. but I do. It's just for those reasons. He's gone from a job with Pats where he went in total transition and a rebuilding job. Yeah. And now he's taken over another rebuilding job. If anything, a bigger rebuilding job, I would think, than what he took over at Pats.
Yeah, I felt they were a shambles on Dock last year. They were in a really, really bad way.
Yeah, no, it was a soap opera. Yeah. Now, I think there's a bit of stability at the club again. So,
well, the new owners and obviously coming in.
There's obviously a relationship there.
Maren Connolly is back involved. Yeah. So there's the good people that were there when they were winning things and successful. There's good people back. And look, Stevie is fully entitled. He has that emotional connection with the club. Who are we to say he shouldn't have... That's my own view. I just think he was mad. But it's a huge job.
Yeah, no, it is. And again, they've obviously used the owner's Stat Sports links, you know, by bringing in a few players from Brentford and whatever else who they have links. And it remains to be seen how that works out, because, you know, on the one hand, it can give you an edge that you have those connections that no other club has kind of that access to. On the other, you're putting your eggs in a lot of eggs in one basket in terms of the type of player you're bringing in. You know, if they've been at Brentford B, they haven't played a lot of competitive football.
Development football, effectively.
Yeah, yeah. So it will be a kind of a work in progress. And
they have to get a good start, don't they?
Well, Derry at home and first, that's going to be
I just think if they don't get, if the results don't come first three or four games, I think there's going to be huge pressure on Steve. And if he's...
I don't think it'd be huge pressure from within the club, but
it'd probably from
Yeah, but from outside as well, because for the reasons you outlined, the people saying, "Well, why did you move?" And then, you know, all that gets reinforced if things start off badly. But
and Pat start winning on
exactly,
the other end.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, Bohemians. Give John O'Connor a bit of stick as well, will you? John was harsh this morning.
Chippy's all right. He's not the worst.
He is. He's a good fella. But
Well, they've lost 5 of the starting 11 from their cup final. Obviously, it's not a new thing for Bows that there's always been a pretty high turnover of players at the end of a season.
Which is something, Neil, that would have irritated the fans and the board members or whoever maybe before. I actually thought at the end of last season that might not be the case. So for it to happen all over again is, for me, was a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I think, well... The players that have brought in this year, a lot of them have been on what they're calling multi-year deals. So it's probably the first time that they've done that. They're signing players on longer than one season contracts. So I guess there'll be a bit of confidence now that it will be a thing of the past from now on. But, you know, some of them were quite specific personal reasons, like Keith Buckley wanted to travel.
Which is fine.
Rob Cornwell wanted to go to America. Realistically, you weren't going to hold on to Georgie Kelly after the season he had. The only thing maybe they could have done was...
Ross,
you weren't going to hold on to him. Andy Lyons, like I think...
That was a surprise one, wasn't it?
Yeah, like Andy's heart was set on going to England. So I guess it was a surprise that he went to Shamrock Rovers. But, you know, that's kind of the one. Like the only thing you'd say with Kelly is that, well, maybe they could have signed him on a 1 year with an option of a second year. But realistically, with how Georgie had done at St. Pat's the previous year...
Nobody
at the time was saying that it was an error to sign him on a 12-month contract. It probably made sense.
And even if you go back to Georgie at the start of the last season, he struggled at the first few games. He was really struggling.
He did. Some people were caning him. I didn't think he was doing as badly as people suggested. I thought his link-up play wasn't bad, but obviously he had a couple of sitters that he missed and... I think he got in the way of a teammate shot at one stage. So it kind of gave the impression that it was just a disaster. I don't think it was as bad as was being made out. But anyway, So
in terms of the season looking ahead...
I don't know. I think they will again probably have a sluggish start because there's been so much upheaval. I think some of the signings that they've made are potentially really good. Ryan Cassidy was on a really upward curve till probably 12 months ago, scoring a lot of goals under level at Watford, did okay. The loan move at Accrington, then got an injury. He would have more underage caps than he does, were not for the fact that we're kind of blessed with a lot of talented young strikers. Jordan Doherty was Ireland's under 17 captain with players like Adam Ida, and Aaron Connolly, players like that. Obviously, he's a little out of sight, out of mind in America, so I don't think anyone can really pass judgment on what sort of signing he is. Flores showed he was
good player,
at Dundalk. I don't know. I assume Doherty is a bit more of the Keith Buckley style player because, you know, if it's Flores and Devoy as the sitting two,
you'd be a bit worried.
Well,
that's huge that they kept, that they held on to Dawson.
Hang on, the producer's shouting in my ear saying there's too much talk about Bowes. Okay.
Well, the fact that
who's going to model the jersey now? Rob gone.
Good question.
Look, I as people,
Alan, would you do it?
Yeah, well, dear, look. There you go, Stewie. There's something. Imagine. I get enough abuse as it is, Stewie, without that. But, okay, well, Bowes, yeah. And look, Keith Long has done an unbelievable job in having to rebuild, if it seems, year on year. I hope this year he wouldn't have had to do that. But as you make a good point, Neil, how do you hold on to Ross, Georgie? They were likely ones. Keith Buckley, fair enough. So I'm looking forward to see actually how to do this year. I have to mention this, so apart from Stewie being my best friend, I have another best friend in Kevin Doherty. And to organise a chat, now we won't pick up the phone. I do have to ring a media officer and request a Zoom call is the only way he'll talk to me now.
Are you joking me?
What kind of an arse is that?
Big time, is he?
He's gone big time, Kev. Big time. Would you ever believe
not
that?
Like Kev. Not like Kev.
Look, I came down to earth person. Won't answer the phone. Won't take a text. I get this back. Ring the media officer. Nah, I'm only joking. But Kev is the manager of Drogheda. I'm really excited for him because it's a big opportunity. He, of course, he managed before, as we know. But this is a big opportunity back in the Premier Division, coming off the back of two or three really good years with Drogheda, along with Tim coming up from Division 1, holding their own last year and doing really well. Of course, they've lost their best players, four or five of their best players, Jimmy Brown going across the water, Conor Kane going to Shells. But he's held on to Diga, Gary Deegan. He's brought in a couple of, I think, decent signings as well for the budget that he has. So
Sean Rowan could end up being one of the stars of the league.
And like when you think of, I suppose, Mark Doyle was a bit of a surprise package with Drogheda, and look what he's gone on to do, and he was very good the other night for Pats as well. So
9 months ago, Sean Rowan was training with Chelsea and Southampton with a view to signing for one of them, and he's played a handful of games at Lincoln. I think he's had an injury, and there's some suggestion that not signing a new contract may have counted against him there. But like, he's highly regarded. He's still only 18.
Where's he playing, Neil?
He's a defender,
so one to watch. Okay,
and he's brought in experience with Keith Cowan at the back as well, and just out and out defender.
He's done right, Kev, to be quite honest, because like, I think to his advantage, he needs to make sure they're tight, like, you know, and especially when you're playing up and draw, it's a tight pitch, and look, like, you have to use everything to your advantage. So,
no, I'm excited for him. Hopefully, it goes well. He's realistic enough to know with the budget and whatever. Depending on, I suppose, how to get off to a start, but they'll probably be down with the likes of UCD, you would think, and Finn Harps. UCD coming into the league as well, I think. If anyone gets a chance, go and watch them. They're great to watch. Best game I saw last year was UCD Waterford in the Cup. It was absolutely brilliant. Of course, Liam Kerrigan, who they've held on to himself and Whelan for now, but I think they might go in the summer. But I think it's hugely dependable on how long to have them for. If they were able to manage to keep them somehow for the season, I would give them a chance if those two leave in the summer. Because the one thing you'll get with UCD, I think, and we know Andy Myler well, they're great to watch and they'll score plenty of goals.
They scored the most goals in the first year, didn't they?
Great,
they scored more than Shells. Yeah,
they are great to watch, but the problem is at the other end, can you keep them out? And it's a big jump, let's be realistic. So, champions, Stu?
Yeah, I can't see beyond Rovers.
Relegated. UCD. Champions.
I'm afraid I'm not going to differ. Shamrock Rovers as champions and UCD.
And I'm the same. We're very lads. Predictable, to be fair, or are we just realists? What do you think? I don't think we'll be far off with that, to be honest.
It's just the change in the clubs is just throwing everything up in the air.
Unfortunately, for the last 2 years, I've predicted Cork to go down and then Longford and So I'm sorry, UCD. But we'll see. But yeah, look, I'm really looking forward to it. It's kicking off Friday night. Get yourself to a game. Stewie, you'll be back on your television screens on Friday night. St. Pat's and Shells in Tolka Park should be an absolute cracker. I think there's, in terms of ticket sales for the team, season tickets, so everything's on the rise, it seems.
There's one thing you have to say. I've never remembered an off season in terms of anticipation as well. I think this thing seems to be gone. This COVID thing, we're over going into a fully fledged season, full crowds. Everyone's got the wind in their sails, like, you know. And there definitely seems to be, and you know, I know it might have been a little bit negative at the start of it all, but there definitely seems to be an air of optimism around football. And as a I think there are a lot more ears open now than there were.
That's probably a good way of describing it. Yeah, even the other night you look, I know it's probably the optics, but you've the Minister for Sport at the match, Michael D. Higgins, they're all there getting involved. I know it's probably them playing a bit of political game as well for themselves.
And that's the key. If you can get Michael D. Higgins on your back, everything is
on your back. We better end it now. He'll be in here in the studio someday this year.
Come in and talk to us, Michael.
There's a bold prediction. But, Neil, it's been an absolute pleasure. We tried to get you in many times, but there's no better place to start on the first one to get you in. So listen, we appreciate you coming in, and thanks a million for that. No Stewie, problem. First show done. Thanks a million. We're up and running.
Cheers, Al. Yeah.
Good luck Friday night. And thanks to everybody for listening. Of course, we wouldn't be here without our sponsors, Benetti Menswear, and they've sponsored the show the last 2 years and have kindly committed to it again this year. And we're really looking forward to the guests and people we can bring to the show. And as I say, hopefully a couple of live shows also. But we're all excited, as you can tell, about the season starting. Get yourselves to a game, as I say, and get in touch as well. Any questions that you may have for Stewie or the guests or the show or anyone, and no stick. Talk to you soon. Thanks a million. Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.